I'm not just a whimsical figure who wears a charming suit and affects a jolly demeanor, you know. I'm a symbol. I'm a symbol of the human ability to suppress the selfish and hateful tendencies that rule the major part of our lives. And if you can't accept anything on faith, then you're doomed to a life dominated by doubt.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast and our season closer for 2019. This is the last full-length episode for season 5 of Invasion of the Remake. Welcome back, Sam.
Bah, humbug.
Alrighty. And welcome back, Trish.
Presents.
That's better. How could
giving
you be
presents?
How could you be like bah humbug after watching Miracle on 34th Street twice?
Twice. That's all I gotta say. Twice.
I do admit the first one I watched was good. The second one I watched, I had some issues.
Yeah, the second time around, I found it a bit tedious the second time around.
You know, I think I would have enjoyed the second one more if I hadn't watched the first one, which is a typical problem with the remakes, is they might be okay movies by themselves, but when you're comparing them to something as fantastically wonderful as that first one, it's flawed immediately.
Now, we are going to be focusing on the 1947 original theatrical film and the 1994 remake, also theatrical. There's been lots of television. I think there's been 3 adaptations for television.
And radio.
Plus, and radio and other, like, anthology shows in the 50s as well. So we're not going to go there. Do your own research on IMDb or research it on Wikipedia or whatever if you want to know about those other iterations. But we're going to focus on the 2 theatricals because we mainly focus on theatrical, not television.
Yeah. And with the odd exception.
We didn't want to watch this every day of the week.
Yeah, like it's a popular story. So yeah, we can't do all of them. But yeah, like, yeah, sometimes we make exceptions. But in this one, there's 2 theatrical releases. Mm-hmm. It makes sense.
I might try to find the radio play, though.
Nice.
That would be worthwhile, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, after watching that first one, I just, why would you mess with what is essentially perfection?
It's really well put together.
Yeah. There's a few minor things that are in it that don't stand up, but you can overlook them so easily just because it is so good.
I think I texted you going, damn, why did I wait like 46 years to see this movie?
Me too.
I mean, granted, maybe I saw it when I was really young before I could, like, formative memories, but there's nothing about that seemed familiar to me, so I don't think so. Like, when I was a kid, came to Christmas movies, I kind of want, I did the Peanuts and the Rudolphs and those almost stop motion ones. I was an animation guy. If it was live action, I didn't care. Even Christmas Carol, I'd only seen once or twice.
Yeah.
Well, and see, I didn't have a TV until I was 10 or 11. Ooh. So I missed most of those formative years where you watch these type of things. And my family's never been into Christmas media, Christmas television, right? So it wasn't until I was an adult that it would sort of popped onto my radar. And by then I was jaded and kind of scroogey and
so,
wasn't interested.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah,
in case you haven't noticed, I don't really care for Christmas all that much.
Yeah.
20 years in retail will do that to you.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah, it will. It'll do it in 1 year is what it'll do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've worked retail a long time too, and I'm still very Christmassy. Still love these things.
I guess it depends on where you work. Where you work, it's probably much more enjoyable, and people don't come in demanding that something, we need this now, I have to have it Anger.
Yeah, I also work for myself, essentially. So when the occasional time that something like that happens, it's like, well, you should have talked to me about 3 or 4 weeks ago when I could have ordered it for you. You don't have time for me to order it for you now. So your own damn fault.
Absolutely. Yeah. See, and that would be nice to be able to do to some people.
Yeah. But this movie hits the nail right on the head as to what it is about Christmas that I don't like now. There are lots of things I do like about Christmas, but the rampant commercialism, which is...
It's only gotten worse. I mean, and this is 1947.
Yeah, like they've saw it happening.
Yeah. I mean, there's things about how even 1947, yes, the commercialism, but there are certain things that they phased out. Like the original film uses the Macy's department store and the now defunct Gimbel's, but they used to have, and the opening of the movie opens with these wonderful kind of animatronic, big, elaborate setups in the window, which I thought is great. And those are the kind of things, at least if you're walking down window shopping, it's still enjoyable for the season. We don't even get that anymore.
No.
Rarely, very rarely. That display, by the way, is still set up every Christmas.
Mm-hmm. It's at a bank of some sort.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I think is really awesome that the exact display from the movie is still in use somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, that should be like some sort of preserved heritage thing. Shouldn't be at a bank. It should be in the Smithsonian.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. But it's gorgeous, yeah.
Well, it used to be, at least I remember when I was little, was it wasn't, like nowadays it's sort of, you have Santa, you have a tree, you have a big lineup, and that's kind of it. And I sort of, maybe it's because I was littler and I just, in my head, have expanded it as to be huge, but it seemed to be like a whole kind of like village and setup, and there was a whole thing around it when you went to go see Santa. Like, you weren't just standing in line and not doing anything. There was other stuff happening.
Well, I think it depended on the mall. Like, the really big malls had big, elaborate setups. Mm-hmm. Like, in Calgary here, Chinook usually has a big setup. But the smaller the mall, the smaller the setup.
Yeah.
And some of the small malls don't even have anything. They'll just have trees.
The mini mall by our place here.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything. They put up Christmas decorations and that's it.
That's it, yeah. Right?
But it's mostly medical services now, so I'm not surprised. Yeah.
Nobody could get really moody when they're like going to get their liver checked.
Yeah. And,
true.
Yeah,
and it's around Christmas, so your liver's going through a lot of shit then.
Yeah. And it's funny that you bring that up, because yesterday Val and I were in a mall. Another one of those small malls. It was like just a little tiny one-level mall. And they do have a Santa setup. It's just, it's not big, but there's a Santa there. And she commented, she says, that makes me really sad that there's a Santa and there's nobody lined up to wait to see him.
Oh, yeah.
That would make me sad as a Santa, too.
Yeah, just thinking about all the mall Santas that are getting out of work now because of Amazon.
Right.
At least if Amazon, their landing page, we need to have, like, some sort of digital Santa.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't want Amazon taking over Santa.
No. Before you hire a Santa, pay your fucking taxes.
Right? Yes.
Anyway.
You don't get Santa.
they're the, what did they call it in the remake? That's the mall, the Shoppers Savings, whatever that place was.
Oh, Shoppers Save Mart or whatever it is.
Yeah, Shoppers Express. Yeah. It was Shoppers Express. They're the Shoppers Express in the remake, run by the villain from Lethal Weapon 2.
Yes.
Oh, also, every time when I watched this, I was watching the bad guy, and I'm like going, no, you have to get rid of the Santa Claus. And I'm a busy man, because next I have to go kill Bill and Ted.
Oh, yes.
As soon as I saw him early in the film, I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be off the rails. Yeah. And then he's not in it very much.
No, sadly. He's busy killing Bill and Ted.
Yeah, and chasing Mel Gibson.
Yep, and he's got a lot on.
And who knew? He actually kind of deserves it, Mel Gibson. Next time I watch that movie, I'm going to be rooting for that dude.
I wonder if diplomatic immunity works if you're a native of the North Pole. Santa just clocks that guy. Diplomatic immunity. Because he is sort of an ambassador.
True.
Yeah, true.
We've got our remake going on.
Yes. Miracle on 34th Street. The action movie.
Well, you know, diplomatic relations would have gone to shit negotiating with Trump, so
Oh, yeah.
Americans, I give the poor biggest... Americans would not have gotten any Christmas.
No. Well, no, because he gives the biggest and the best Christmas. I'm really great at Christmas. Everybody knows I do Christmas. I'm the only Christmas. I am Santa Claus. Like, really, we got to look at that. Okay, so enough of the political stuff. Let's go on to the really nice original that made me very happy.
What does Donald Trump want for Christmas? More spray on Tanner.
I don't know. He should be asking for a soul. But I don't think they can get that.
His bed sheets must look like the Shroud of Turin every morning. Okay, we're going to go. Let's go back to Miracle on 34th Street. A much happier topic.
Yes.
It's I can't say how much I enjoyed this movie because it's. It's wonderful even at 46 to watch this and have it as a first time watch and still view it with that. Child wonder of it all.
Oh, for sure. When I was texting you, as I was trying to, I started watching it, and I said, I hope I enjoyed it as much as you did because I was cranky. I was in a bad mood.
And I suspected you were not in the bad mood after the first 10 minutes.
About that, yeah. And my mood had certainly lightened, and by the end, I was feeling really damn good.
And you know what's part of it that I really enjoyed about it, which they totally turfed in the remake, was the prosecutor, not a bad guy, judge. Not a bad guy. Like they weren't these evil hand-wringing villains. They were just people doing their job.
Yeah,
and
well,
were dragged in. Like the prosecutor, he concedes a lot of stuff. He's like going, "Yeah, I know it's shit. I don't know why I want to do it, but I got it. That's my job."
And in fact, even the political motivations, the guy who's looking at the judge in the original film, he's like, "No, you can't have him go to Bellevue. That's going to look horrible for you."
Yeah.
So there's a lot of pressure from the other side of it, where it's kind of reversed in the movie. Like, I can see why they did things in that movie just to make them make a little more sense, because in the original film, they put the burden on proof of the defender, and it should have been the prosecutor.
Yes.
So I get it, but it changes everything.
Yes. It really does. And part of it, too, is this is a mid-90s film, and people just needed a villain, right? So you needed somebody to dislike.
Yeah, there's that clear-cut villains, and even the judge, you're like, oh, he might go guilty because he's being pressured to do so. Again, for political aspirations, it makes a little less sense there, but at least he seems to be a kind man, and he certainly is swayed the other direction.
In the remake, when I'm watching that final argument that What's-His-Noodle's given, who's defending Kris Kringle? Dylan McDermott?
Dylan McDermott.
His argument at the end basically just says, you have to find him guilty, because the whole point he's like saying is like, what's better, a lie that brings a smile or like a truth that brings a tear? I'm like, he's the law. The truth is what has to happen. You've just told him he has to call him guilty.
Yeah.
You dumbass.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
I'm not crazy about how they just Americanized that whole ending.
Oh, yeah. I was really, really mad at the end of this one because of some of those changes at the end. Like, that last 30 minutes.
It doesn't become like this, what you can enjoy globally and understand it, how it works. Now it's become a very much an American idea of In God We Trust, because we put that on our $1 bill, so the federal government believes in the intangible.
Yes.
I mean, like, I get what they were doing, but it feels a little more flag-wavy.
But and also, what drove me the most nuts about this is how this movie ends is the almighty dollar is what saves fucking Santa.
It doesn't, it's no longer the consumerism. I mean,
money is all.
Yeah, everything. It's not the commentary on consumerism. I mean, that's the one thing I thought was wonderful about the film, both films actually, is Santa's figuring a way to use consumerism for himself in a way to use it advantageously.
Yeah, to benefit others.
To benefit others.
Yeah.
And that was really clever. I thought that was is still very clever. I mean, 1947 to 94, and even now, it's still like, that's a. You know, if you can manipulate that, I'm like, oh, well, Santa didn't get it for you because he told your mom where to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, tick. But, and I love how this subtle manipulation of everything to get what everybody wants. And it kind of explains a lot.
But there's two things about both movies that sort of threw me and I didn't quite get, is why these women are angry that he's telling them where to get this stuff. Like, I know at the end, the point they're making to the guy is like, you've now got my business forever because you've been honest with me. And again, good customer service. There's places I go to specifically because I like how I've been treated there and I'll just not go anywhere else. But it seems like they're mad that they've been told the right thing to do. And I'm like, no, I think you should feign surprise.
Yeah.
But the anger always seems weird.
It did, but I think it was to set up the other character's sort of reaction, right? He's like, the way that he responds to them is like, okay, this person's mad because we're sending them to other places. And then they turn around and it's kind of nonsensical.
Yeah.
That they would come off mad and then turn around and say, so now I'm a lifetime Macy's shopper.
Yeah, it's probably not the way it's written so much as the performance of it. Yeah, because they do come off angry despite the fact that we're like, wait a minute, no, thank you for that.
They're happy. Yeah. They're and happy about that. It's weird. Because, I mean, like, I can see you coming up to the guys like, oh, I need to talk to you. And you're very intense about it. And of course you think if somebody's intense, you can think they're mad. And what they can do is start off in intense, but it's disbelief, not anger. Mm. I don't know who the directors on both of these really needed to think about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The direction was wrong in both of those scenes.
Well, even in the original, and I have to say some of the performances were a little uneven anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, like you mentioned, the ladies who were approaching the one guy and saying, right? And
yeah.
Then, of course, Susan roles. In the first one, she was really stiff.
I think that
she's
was...
She's a child actress,
I mean,
though, right?
Yeah, that was done with purpose. Oh, you're talking about the kid. I don't know. I really enjoyed her performance because she was
supposed to be a little bit stiff at the beginning.
Well, but she's kind of mirrors her mother in a way. Like you can see this is her mother's daughter. Like just in the way they interact with other people. I mean, she's just a very more overtly serious type of child. I mean, it's hard not to fall in love with the one that played Matilda
in the remake.
Yeah, Mara Rooney is wonderful.
But she's, a lot less stiff and doesn't quite come off as serious. When she does, it's not as convincing.
The little girl is Natalie Wood.
It is, yes, in the original film.
That's sort of what I interpreted it as, is she's just a very serious child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was trying to play a child with adult mannerisms. And like at the beginning of the movie, I found her a little bit stiff, but as she got to be more kid-like, I enjoyed her a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And I think just the challenge of a kid playing adult mannerisms is always going to come across a little bit stiff or typically does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Initially, I think I felt the same way, but I fell into it fairly quickly where I accepted it. I quite enjoyed Natalie Wood in the role.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Don't get me wrong. I still thought she was lovely. And as I said, as she became more childlike, she became a lot more
I mean, this is solid. 47 where they like to kind of hammer it home a little more, make it a little more obvious. There's still all that stuff they would do at stage. So they really want to make it that transformation look dramatic as well.
Yeah.
But it was excellent. I'm going to run the trailer for the original 1947 right now. This is a weird one because not a lot of the movies in it. It's more about the director talking to people, trying to get a feel for it. It is the weirdest thing. And I'm going to share that with you right now. Fair warning, it's a bit long, so we'll see you on the other side.
That's no good. Turn it off. Stop it. Turn it off. That won't work. It's no good. What do you make a trailer for? To give the public an idea of what kind of a picture to expect.
But, boss, we
thought... Hilarious, romantic, tender, exciting. Make up your minds. It can't be all of those things.
Mr. Schaefer, if you'd look at the picture...
I don't have to look at the picture. I know you're wrong. Tender, exciting. Why, they're practically opposites. You've got to decide what kind of a picture this is. Is it a romantic love story? Is it an exciting thriller? Is it a hilarious comedy? Make up your minds. Now go to work and fix it up. Hey, Rex. How are you?
Ed, how are you?
Good to see you. How's the ghost of Mrs. Muir?
It's pretty good, I think. How's New York?
Fine. Say, Rex, have you seen Miracle on 34th Street?
Yes, saw the preview. I've never heard laughs like it in the theater before.
Oh, is that right?
Don't miss it. I was crazy about it.
You really think we've got something, huh?
I don't know whether the women will like it, but it's a great man's picture. Well, it's nice to see you, Ed. Got to get back to work.
Yeah. See you later.
Ann Baxter, good to see you.
Ed, how are you?
I haven't seen you since the Academy Awards. Congratulations on winning that Oscar.
Thanks, Ed, very much.
Oh, say, Ann.
Yeah.
Have you seen Miracle on 34th Street?
Have I? Ed, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I understand. It's a pretty good comedy.
Comedy? Well, I suppose that's true. I had a million laughs, but the thing that got me were the tears in between. It's so tender and charming and warm. I don't know how the men are going to like it. It's a great woman's picture.
Is that so?
Oh, there's one scene between John Payne and Maureen O'Hara. Well, he's trying to prove... No, I'm not going to spoil it for you. You go and see it. I'm sorry, Mr. Schaefer. I'm just learning to drive.
So I see. How are you, Peggy Ann?
I'm fine now that I know I didn't hit you.
Tell me, have you seen Miracle on 34th Street?
Three times, and it's simply groovy. Mr. Gwen's just wonderful. You know, we worked together in Bob's Son of Battle.
Yeah, I saw it. He's great in it.
Wait till you see him in this. You'll love him, and you'll love the picture, too. I tell you, it's a groovy movie. Don't you think so, Dick? Dick?
Yeah.
Dick Hames, I didn't see you.
Well, I've been on the floor. That sudden stop got me. Oh, but seriously, Peggy's right. That Miracle on 34th Street is really something. You know, with me, moving pictures have got to move. They've got to be exciting and different. And this thing is really it. It's the most unusual story that I've ever seen. In the last 20 minutes of the picture, had me sitting on the edge of my seat every second of the time. And what a finish.
Yeah. Maybe I ought to take a look at it.
Well, if you run it again, tell me about it. Okay, we're ready.
That is the greatest picture I have ever made. And I've got the angle on the trailer. Boys, we've got to get across to the public that that picture has everything. Why, it's hilarious. It's romantic. It's tender. It's charming. It's delightful. It's exciting. And it's groovy.
Yes, yes, Mr. Schaefer.
That does it, boss.
Mr. Schaefer, you've got a great idea.
Naturally. Now, I'll tell you what we do.
It's a weird one.
Yes.
Highly recommend that people actually watch the video because, yeah, that, especially when the director that is talking to the people in the car and then this dude pops out of the back seat. It is so bizarre.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'll interrupt this kidnapping to tell you about how I like your movie.
I mean, honestly, if I'd seen that trailer before, I might have saved it for a cult movie trailer, a go-go.
Nice.
Coming to you soon in just a couple short weeks.
Absolutely.
Okay, Miracle on 34th Street from 1947. The story is by Valentine Davies, who wrote the Benny Goodman story and the Glenn Miller story, and apparently a whole bunch of other stories. That's what happens when you're a story writer.
Yeah, funny how that works.
The screenplay and the director was George Seton, who also directed Apartment for Peggy, and wrote, I just wanted to mention this because I was thought it was funny, wrote a movie called The Magnificent Dope, which goes really good with Reefer Madness.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just a week ago.
That should have been an alternate title for it. The Magnificent Dope. It's awesome.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty funny. Okay, this one stars Edmund Gwenn, who plays Kris Kringle and won an Oscar for said role. He was in Them, The Walking Dead, and Pride and Prejudice. And no, not that Walking Dead.
Mm-mm.
He would have been long dead.
Mm-hmm.
for The Walking Dead. That, this is a different Walking Dead.
It's a completely different meaning, doesn't it?
Was he a zombie in Walking Dead?
Well, maybe.
That would be the only way he qualified.
A zombie Santa Claus.
Oh.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
And honestly, from all stuff I've read about Edmund Gwenn, he was just one of those really genial, kindly old men. And by the end of that shoot, everybody believed he was Santa Claus.
Yeah.
I could see it. I mean, that beard was magnificent.
It really was. And he did have that twinkle in his eye and that energy in his step. There was something about it. It's like, yeah, I would have believed too.
You're just drawn to him too. You're like going, I feel safe and happy with you. Let's stay here.
And that's really, you got to find that. That makes that so important for that part. I don't know how the TV ones go, but that's the one thing I think they nailed in the remake as well is Richard Attenborough is
he was really, really good. Well. Yeah. He still doesn't compare though.
Yeah, I don't know. Richard Attenborough, every time I see him in anything, I just think he was like built out of a gene therapy something or other from Walt Disney. Like, it just, he looks like every Walt Disney character's grandfather.
I do see, I can picture several animated characters that do resemble him.
It doesn't, it's not hard.
No, it's true, it's not hard. I still think that the Santa from the original was just a little more Santa-like for me.
I do have to give it to, I mean, he won an Oscar for a reason, and I have to edge it out as well to Edmund Gwenn. He was wonderful in this film. Maureen O'Hara was Doris Walker, and she was in The Quiet Man, another great movie. John Payne was Fred Gailey, and he was in The Razor's Edge, which I wrote down mainly because I don't want to cover that someday because that original movie was remade with Bill Murray.
Yes. I saw it when I did this. I was thinking the same thing. Oh, yeah, we need to do that.
Yeah. Gene Lockhart was Judge Harper, and he was in His Girl Friday. Natalie Wood is... She's kind of infamous for a couple of different things. I mean, she certainly had a good career for her short life. And unfortunately, I think that good career was also overshadowed by her mysterious death.
Yes.
But you guys can look into that because I don't want to sour a Christmas episode with that. But she was in Rebel Without a Cause and West Side Story.
Yes.
I mean, and this.
And this, yeah.
I'm like, she died in her early 40s and... That's three incredible movies that I just named. And that's not even close to her resume.
So, not even scratching the surface.
That's a really impressive filmography for such a short and wonderful career. Porter Hall was Granville Sawyer, and he was in Double Indemnity and The Thin Man, another great pair of movies. I highly recommend both of those movies. William Frawley was Charlie Halloran, and... He was in Lady on a Train, which I do believe was just remade a few years ago.
Yes.
And Crime Doctor's Manhunt. I just want to mention that because how awesome is that title?
Crime Doctor's Manhunt. Oh, wow. Okay, you know, we have to start listing the ones where we can just make an episode based on the title alone. Like, just remake the... We're not even remaking the movie.
We're just trying to figure out what it is.
Yes.
We'll make it to what we think that movie should be.
Based on the title alone without having watched it. That would be a good Patreon type of thing.
Yes.
Let us know if you're interested in that. We might launch that in Patreon next year. Jerome Cowan was the district attorney, Thomas Mara. And he was in The Maltese Falcon.
Whoa.
Like, yeah, for this is an era where everybody was assigned movies by the studio.
Yeah, they're contract players, right?
Yeah, contract players. And some of these people, I think it was Maureen O'Hara. She was actually on her way back to Ireland and didn't want to do the movie. Thankfully, she saw the script and she changed her mind quickly. And Philip Tong was Julian Shellhammer. He was in The House of Wax, which we should cover someday, and another wonderfully titled movie that I have no idea what it's about called Invisible Invaders.
Again.
Right.
Gotta put that down.
I love these old movies. It's like, why has nobody done anything with these? Like, I want to see that just based on the title.
Yes. Yeah, Invisible Invaders. That's going to save on special effects.
Yes. Very true.
For sure. I'm sure Universal was like, hey, Invisible Man, we don't have to cast anybody. Just got to do a lot of things on strings. Oh, wait, that is special effects.
Yeah. Well, sort of. You could have somebody just reacting to stuff. Oh, no.
An Invisible Invader sounds like that film. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're just going to pretend that there's something there?
Mm.
Pretend you get knocked over. Pretend you get bumped. Have somebody do the Evil Dead you're fighting yourself type of deal.
That was always fun in theater class.
Nice. Okay, I think this Patreon thing is sizing up pretty good.
All right, we got some ideas for you guys. All right, let's get back to Miracle on 34th Street. Now, this original film, obviously black and white, 1947, but it's one of those really, it's not part of your lexicon of Christmas movies, it probably should be.
It is now in mine.
Yeah.
Oh, me too.
And there's so much of it is still intact within the remake as well.
Yeah, but a few of the things that really made it wonderful, they pulled out.
Yes.
Yes.
They took out Alfred. I loved Alfred.
And I hate that yeah. Alfred's not even credited for being a fairly major minor character. Like, he's on screen more than once with dialogue, and he's being kind of mentored by Kris Kringle.
And he's even at the end of the movie as his protege, as it were.
Yeah, and he's uncredited in the movie.
Yeah, because he represents everything that Santa's trying to accomplish.
Yeah, right? He presents the human person who does things specifically because they make other people feel good. Exactly what Santa Claus wants to do.
Yeah.
And also, he's the catalyst for when Kris Kringle just loses it on that dumbass.
Yes.
What I found, I was thinking about this, what I found the least believable part of this movie wasn't the fact they put Santa Claus on trial, was that this guy was surprised somebody hit him.
Yes. Because he's a miserable, miserable bastard.
He's a bastard. He should be hit all the time. This should not surprise him.
No, it should not. Even his wife hates him. I do want to mention that Alfred does make an appearance in the remake.
Where? Yes, he does. He's the doorman at the whatever the mall.
Yeah.
Whatever they called it.
Shoppers Express?
No. Was it at Shoppers Express? No. That was the villains. It was Kohl's.
Yeah, he should be working at the nice place, not the bad place.
Why does a department store have a psychologist?
That is my other really huge question.
That was probably one of the more absurd things in the movie. And why is he such a miserable
actually, you know what?
Prick?
It's not that absurd. It should be policy to have somebody there that you can talk to. Working retail is way more stressful than people realize. And that's somebody should be there that you can go to and talk to so you don't have any real trouble. So they actually should have them. I thought it was a genius idea.
But not this guy. Oh, yeah. Like, this is the other thing. They should have proper training, because the entire time I was listening to this, when Alfred was telling him what happened with this guy, I'm like going, okay, A, you don't tell the patient what they're feeling or what they believe. Mm-hmm. That's not what you're supposed to do, ever.
Yeah, he was instigating.
I hate my father because he told me I did. No, a good psychologist would never do that.
Yeah, the way he's messing up Alfred.
Why Santa got so upset is because he recognized exactly that. Is this guy's placing his neuroses on Alfred because Alfred's a young, malleable young person.
And a little quick swat with the cane and over dramatizing it, the psychologist realizes he can get this guy canned and maybe even destroy his life by throwing him in Bellevue, mm-hmm. calling him old man crazy. Because, I mean, everybody already thinks he's a little nutty because he thinks he's Santa Claus. And yet the fact that he lives in an old folks home.
Well, and what I wanted was that one other actual doctor they brought in who was a specialist in geriatrics, i.e. somebody who would know more about elderly people and their mental state. I wanted him to play kind of a bigger role. That was the only note I would have.
I thought he would show up again.
I wanted him to show up again.
Especially at the trial.
Absolutely. And like to say is like, and I wanted him to be the one to say is like going, I don't know where the psychologist got any of his certifications because he doesn't know anything about psychology.
Right. Well, Santa even, or Chris even says, you're not a psychiatrist.
When he
confronts him, right? He actually says, you're not a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's okay for you to treat Alfred?
Yeah. And
just paddling in this area. That's not
and
yours.
And Kris Kringle's clearly gone through these psychological exams before. He knew what to do. He knew how to do
it. It was so funny when he did it, too.
And he's like, oh, let me guess. You got to do this, this, and this. And then he actually goes through the exam and he's like, all right, we'll do this all over again. But
exactly.
That brief moment in time where he actually loses his faith in himself because he lost his temper.
I know. And it's sort of like, yeah, you can lose your temper, but here's the thing. You're supposed to give cold to the bad little boys and girls. You can't give cold to this dude, so maybe you should hit him.
The guy deserved a whack. He deserved way more than that.
It wasn't like, I'm going to bash your brains in type of whack. It was a whack.
And I just wished at one point Maureen O'Hara...
How you just like... flick somebody's ear or somebody.
Yeah,
you,
to get their attention.
Get their attention, yeah.
I just want, when he was there and they were looking at him, I just want Maureen O'Hara to say once, like, oh, come on. You can't see me. Tell me this is the first time somebody's hit you. That would have made the movie for me.
Yeah, and I understand why they changed that in the remake, because they had the same reaction. He said, why does a department store have a psychologist?
It's just not something that happens anymore.
No.
I've never seen that in my lifetime. No. I've never heard of that in my life.
No. And I don't know that it's a real thing, and it may have been just a device, but I think that having a competent psychologist on staff for a big store like that is not a bad thing.
Well, see, here's the thing. I think it can be a bad thing in one respect. What you should have is you should have a separate institution that does the psychology for it, because they need to be able to say, like, if somebody says, I want to look at somebody's records, if you work for the company, they'll be like, I guess maybe I have to. Mm-hmm. Like, it's sort of, if you make it, keep it separate, then their confidentiality is much better served than if you have somebody
and
on staff.
That's fair, absolutely.
Especially when you're making this type of claim against an elderly old man, I think they should be looking into the people making the claim in the first place. I mean, a little flack on the head, a little misdemeanor assault compared to ruining a guy's remaining years and throwing him in Bellevue because he whacked somebody on the head.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't bashing his brain, but that's the thing. They were lying.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
In both movies.
In the remake, it was a setup.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing's a setup.
Oh, the whole thing in the remake, what I couldn't believe as I was watching the whole thing, I'm like, this guy is dressed like a fucking mugger. It looks like a mugging. If I was the person who came up, it was the Cole Santa, I'm like, I'm pretty positive that guy tried to mug him. I wouldn't believe it.
Despite the fact that they already knew that the victim was the Santa that got fired, the drunk Santa that got fired, didn't raise alarm bells. They knew this already. Yep. That should have just dismissed everything.
Oh, and when he comes in while he's working and says all that stuff to the children, where the fuck was security?
Yeah.
Security, like, security should have been...
This is the mid-90s. There's security cameras and there's security in a big mall like that.
Security should have come in and, like, violently taken that guy out.
Yeah, I mean, a big department store like that, absolutely they would have taken him out of there.
And also, not even just...
Especially because he was upsetting the children, too.
Well, not even just that. He was there leering at the children without any child around. That's fucked.
Yeah, I know why they changed it, but... That change diminished the movie for me.
Yeah.
It did to me as well.
It just because he was so slimy and skeevy and not in an effective way the way the psychologist was.
I mean, they kind of, what they wound up doing was taking one villain and turning him into like three.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get, it's one of those things where you understand what they're trying to do, but it doesn't work as well.
No. And again, if I hadn't seen the original, it probably wouldn't have bothered me as much.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. If I'd watched the remake first, I don't think I would have judged that scene as harshly as I am now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is part of the problem when you're watching these things back to back. But even when I want to watch the next one, I still would have like, this works way better in the original.
And as opposed to like an actual mustache twirling villain, what worked better in the original was, it's not like Santa's just on trial for mental incompetency. He's up against a system, not so much these people setting him up.
Yeah.
And that's harder.
Yeah. It's not an evil department store at all. It's this one guy who's just... doesn't like Kris Kringle in that original film.
He doesn't like anybody.
I mean, they were using real department stores, so they couldn't paint Gimbel's or Macy's in a bad light.
Yeah.
So they both were like, hey. And I mean, they're trying to top each other.
It's very competitive, but in a very genial way.
Yeah, it was. Whereas, you know, it's clear cut, like, oh no, you've got a really bad, bad guy. This guy tried to kill Mel Gibson.
Yes.
And this is a very,
and Bill and Ted, which I think is worse.
Yes. This is a very John Hughes type of thing, too. He loved his mustache twirling villains.
We bring up a lot of the same criticisms about the live action 101 Dalmatians. Yeah.
Yes.
For similar reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
And that was another John Hughes written movie.
Yeah. It loses a lot of the emotional kick when you just have this clear-cut villain. It just doesn't feel... It feels like, whatever. Like, I stop caring as much.
Yeah, like, it kind of pops you out a bit because there's... you can see so many people are being affected by Kris Kringle in that original film, and less so. I mean, and sometimes it feels forced when they are, because you've got his two henchmen, you know,
James Remar and Jane Leaves.
Yeah, Josh Ackland was Victor Landberg. He was the villain from Lethal Weapon, and yeah, that was Jane Leaves, and James Remar were the two henchmen.
Completely wasted both of them.
Yeah, so they arranged the setup with the original drunk Santa, and they've done all this horrible stuff to Santa Claus, and in the end, they're wearing buttons that I believe.
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm not buying it.
Nope.
I needed assholes. Them. They must be more conflicted. Like, I kind of enjoyed that moment, but I wish they'd built it where they're like struggling a bit. They're like going,
you don't see the change.
Yeah, because like where it would be great, like where they met him with the reindeer or something like that, where they're like going, you know what, there's something off about this whole thing. I don't trust it. Like, I feel bad about it.
But they're completely unnecessary extraneous characters anyhow. They were. Because the thing that works in the original movie so well is that there is no villain, right? The villain is the commercialism of Christmas and this and the loss of the spirit of Christmas.
And that's part of what Kris Kringle's on this journey to discover by replacing the Santa in the parade and agreeing to be this mall Santa. He's experiencing the commercialism on the ground for the, what I'm guessing, for the first time, and really trying to understand it while putting his own personality into it and just being the person he is. So when he's given this script saying, okay, when they want for Christmas, he's like, oh, recommend this, and this, these high-priced items.
And they missed that in the remake, too, that wonderful bit where he gets the list of overstocked toys.
Yeah, see, that would have been perfect in the movie.
Which he ignores, because he just winds up going, and that one lady who's like, you know, kid's asking for this thing, and she's shaking her head because she can't find it anywhere.
Yes.
And Macy's is out of them. And then it was really expensive and gets mad at him. And it's like, no, it's over here at Gimbel's. And it's like half of what it was here.
Yep.
Macy's doesn't have it. Go get it there. I know it's there.
Make your child happy.
Yeah, exactly. Make your child happy. Yeah, and she just can't wrap her head around that. Yeah.
Neither of those women could.
No. They don't understand it, but they're like, okay, thank you. I mean, I still get that from time to time. I mean, in the comic industry that I am, in our town anyway, we're all fairly friendly with each other, and we'll recommend. I don't have something, or we specialize in different things, so I recommend people to stores all the time, and vice versa. And it seems to work out.
Absolutely. And that, like I said before, there's stores I go to specifically because they do stuff like that.
And they wind up being loyal customers.
Absolutely. That's how you get loyalty. Yeah, be so a little honest.
There is truth in this movie. It does work.
It does work. Yeah, because if you're sure that you're serving the customer and not your pocket, it works.
I mean, sometimes I'll get people ask me, oh, where can I find this? I'm like, well, I don't work at these other places. I don't know. I'm not Kris Kringle who just knows, but I'll give him my best guess.
Well, there you go. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
Grow out your beard and see what happens.
Yeah. I love the little things. Like, there's always doubt whether this is just some crazy old dude who really believes, and he's gone whole hog into this. He's got his own Santa outfit and the whole bit. But it's just him being him that makes you believe, regardless of whether it is. And there's all these little things like, oh, well, here's this little Dutch girl.
Oh, I love that bit.
So,
and I did love the sign language in the sign remake. That was beautiful. Sign
language. And they do mention he spoke Dutch as a throwback and Swahili to another
Russian,
girl.
Yeah.
And Russian. Yeah. So there's these things. It's like, wow. Like, he can communicate with all children.
Yeah.
And it's understated, but it's there. And it's one of those things like, oh, this is an interesting angle on how to do this.
I was also reading online that actually one of the things with mall Santas, what they do when they go to their Santa training is they do get taught ASL for deaf children.
That's nice.
And so if you have Spanish or any other languages, it does help.
I like that. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed that. And I like the fact that they kept that and really leaned into it in the remake. I mean, the remake's 20 minutes longer, but it didn't feel like it added anything by adding 20 minutes.
Nope.
Well, I mean, there were little scenes that they cut. Like, they didn't have him. They didn't set up Kris wandering around Macy's before going to the parade and teaching that guy how to whip, and, mm-hmm. and they really shrunk that intro down
yes.
from the original film to allow more space. And I found myself getting irritated when they gave me like two montages. That's something like Hughes really likes, his montage scenes, and I hated both of them.
Yes. Well, and they spent a lot of time on the relationship between Brian and the mother, whose name I've all of a sudden forgotten.
Dory.
But yeah, they spent a lot of time kind of shoehorning that relationship in. It wasn't necessary.
Oh my God,
It worked so much better in the original, even though it was...
Because it felt sweeter in the original, where it's like, dude, you're trying too hard.
Can I ask you a question?
But I mean, we're coming into the remake where that's a little more in progress.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah. And I would have been okay with that.
Dylan McDermott. Now, he's nice to look at, but I don't know. In the remake, I'm like, everything I saw, I was like, this is just skeevy. I don't believe him as the romantic lead. It drove me
nuts.
And
I think we've both been tainted by American Horror Story.
not just that. Like, it's just the way he responds to things, the way he reacts with things. Like, when he gives her the engagement ring, like, you didn't discuss any of this beforehand with her.
That's part of my objection.
And then you get pissed off. And he's like, well, I love Susan like my own. What, so you can just ditch because you don't get her mother? Fuck you, guy.
I think he was a good family
man.
Pisses
me off.
He was good with Susan. But yeah, as far as the relationship between
him
and Doris,
date him.
That was not so good.
Yeah,
there's nothing there that made me feel comfortable.
No, it didn't work for me. I think that starting with the relationship in progress like it did in the remake was fine, right? Rather than the way it started in the original. But I think that shoehorning more stuff into it.
And you think that is shoehorned? Wait till we get to the ending of that movie.
Oh my god.
Like post-trial. Like,
you can't surprise wedding anybody.
You
I don't give a fuck who you are.
On Christmas Eve and wake up, they've post-coitus.
Mm-hmm. And they're pregnant already.
Because this is what, in the remake, the kid wanted. In both movies, the kid wants something kind of impossible to prove that he is Santa Claus. In the original film, it's just this house.
With a big tree
that means
and
something.
And a swing.
So it kind of represented a family for her. Where Hughes took this a little further in the remake, and when they post the trial, and yes, Santa's proven and all that. Post the trial, they set up the wedding. Santa sets up a wedding by leaving a card, meet me at this place, and to both of them, and they both think, hey, you wrote that. No, you wrote that. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, we've seen that in a million sitcoms over the years. So we find out they do get married, and they both come out of the same bedroom, so we assume post-coitus. And the kid had wished for a house, a little brother, and a father.
Yeah.
So, all right, we've knocked two out right there, and we go to the house, which they can now afford because they got this huge hefty bonus because Kris Kringle was one hell of a Santa.
How much of a fucking bonus? That's a huge house.
That was a
big ass
house.
No way.
Fully furnished.
Is it a $1 million goddamn bonus?
At least in the original, it was an empty goddamn house that was up for sale.
A reasonably sized house.
A reasonably sized, really nice, but reasonably sized empty house was up for sale. This house was up for sale, but fully furnished, all the Christmas trimmings, everything was in there.
Yeah, but I don't care if you're Santa. You don't surprise wedding someone.
No.
don't.
It was really awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah, it really was. And even the priest was like, hey, are we going to do this?
Yeah.
Yeah, the priest should have been like, yeah, I think. And they didn't have a marriage license, so how the fuck did that hold?
And where was the witness?
Where was the witness and where was the marriage license?
Well,
it's not valid.
Yeah. Like, maybe there's
not
a piece of paper.
State of New York.
Maybe there's a piece of paper waiting for them when they got there.
Yeah, who knows? But it just, right up until, I mean, I enjoyed it for the most part right up until the last part of the trial. I hated that they got rid of the letters. The letters was so touching and important.
I mean,
they just ignored it.
Well, I get what Hughes was doing. Like, it is his job to prove Santa is Santa. It is his job to keep him out of Bellevue and to make him the heroic character. Like, I understood all the beats they were trying to do here, so it should be up to him to make the discovery, not the post office going, hey, this guy's on trial, we know where we can send all these letters, ha ha ha, this will be great.
Yeah, which I enjoyed far
you
more
know
though
what
I did too. Yeah. And story-wise, it makes more sense what Hughes was trying to do, but it doesn't work.
No.
Well, no, because the other thing about it, too, is he's supposed to prove he's Santa. What I liked about the original one is, like, the post office, a federal government institution, mm-hmm. is recognized literally him. Saying that he is recognized as the recipient of yeah. this mail. Tampering with mail is a crime, so why would they deliver all this mail if this guy wasn't Santa?
Yeah. I mean, now, in a real trial, the burden of proof would have been on the prosecutor, not mm-hmm. the defender. So, again, to make that a little more sense, they had to put that back on the prosecutor. Well, you don't have to prove he's Santa Claus. I just have to prove he's not.
Mm-hmm.
So they did a really good job with that. But the defense was the federal government recognizes a belief in the intangible based on our cash.
Which is dumb.
Yeah, as we roll back around to, well, that really counteracts the intuitiveness of the whole, and the point of the whole movie of this counter consumerism
but
type of film.
It also isn't supportive.
No.
Because the federal government believes something doesn't mean that this case is true.
No, and that's why the letters work better. I was, much like Sam, really upset that they got rid of that because I thought it was so sweet.
Yes.
Mm.
Right. You know,
even again, though Santa's mailing address is in Canada.
Yes.
Yeah, he has his own postal code.
How did New York have all those letters?
Well, Dead Letters Office, they did say that.
Yeah, but they should ship it to Canada. I mean, just forward the letters to Canada. We'll hold the mail.
Don't do that. Yeah, no, the letters thing is sweet because he uses children as witnesses to begin with. And he's like, well, no, we need something more tangible. And then the federal government recognizes it with these letters from children.
Oh,
yes. And specifically from Susan is the one that instigates that because she addresses one to Santa Claus at the courthouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's the other thing about I didn't like about the remake is in the original, there is one character they split into two in the remake. In the original, the one character witness he brings is the prosecutor's son.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that was great because it's very quick, it's very concise to have that one witness.
And he was great.
He really was.
He was so good.
It's so good.
Where it's very concise, you get your moment across. But what they do in the remake is they make it the judge's like grandson and the prosecutor's wife.
Mm-hmm.
No, that doesn't work. And I kind of liked
well,
it in the original.
Just not as well.
No, yeah. And I liked how the prosecutor in the original, like, it's his own son. So he's kind of like, ah, whatever. Like, he knows he can't, but there's a gentleness to the way he's upset
yeah,
about it.
I didn't mind the way they handled that in the remake. But again,
well,
the original works better.
When I looked at J.T. Walsh and his wife is answering the questions, I'm like, I'm looking at the look on his face. I'm like, oh, he's going to kick the shit out of her later.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Actually, he's asking her to fucking perjure herself. He's shaking his head at her.
He's shaking his head. And yeah. That tells me, because they changed his name in that movie. Dylan McDermott was Bedford. And there should have been like, hey, he's trying to lead the witness here.
Well, and she should have said like going, I would have had her say like, look, honey, I cannot lie in a courtroom. Otherwise, it completely undermines the fact that I married you, a prosecutor.
Yeah.
So, but he looked like he was going to fucking kill her. And I'm like going, she's in danger. This makes me very uncomfortable.
Yeah. And in the original film, it's a different scenario. He's a little more
resigned
to it. Well, and he's also like, well, yes, his wife is very upset with him for having to prosecute
his kids.
This isn't a trial, it's a hearing, but still. But mom's upset because the kids are upset.
But he also concedes when he's like, oh my God, that's my kid. Yeah. She shows him the subpoena and he's like, oh, well,
yeah.
Because like he knows that's how the law works.
This is just something John Hughes likes to do. It's like, well, you're not supposed to like the prosecutor, so we're going to make him a little less likable. But it works just fine in the original film where you do... You don't mind, and you could see the guy's conflicted, and it's fine. It works so well.
It's better.
And this comes to one of my constant complaints about the dumbing down of cinema, is this whole thing where filmmakers and studios feel the need to spoon-feed things to people. Like, it's like, here's your villain. Oh, here's your other villain, right? Mm-hmm. Without letting people sort of see the film in its whole context. And that's why, in the end, the remake fails a little bit, because it really does lose the message of anti-consumerism and getting into the real spirit of Christmas.
Yeah.
From the legal side of things, like the prosecutor, he might not have a choice to take this case. That would be a whole thing. Like, at least put it into that where it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't have to make him a bad guy. Just make it, he's like, I can't say no. I
just like he did in the original.
Yes.
I need to get that trailer in for the remake, and we'll be back with a little bit more of Miracle on 34th Street. And here's the trailer for the 1994.
He thinks you're Santa Claus. I am.
You know what? I know.
You know what?
The secret.
What secret?
Santa Claus. I've known for a long time. He's not real.
Says who?
My mom.
I am the parent. You are the friendly guy down the hall.
They say that seeing is believing. But the truth is, the world is held together by things you can't see.
There really has to be something you want for Christmas.
A house, a brother, and a dad. That's all I ever want. He loves you and he wants to kiss you. And he thinks he's the most beautiful woman in the world. If you're really Santa Claus, you can get it for me.
Right.
It's an engagement ring.
If you can't accept anything from faith, then you're doomed for a life dominated by doubt.
She's deaf. You don't have to talk to her. She just wanted to see you.
You are a very beautiful young lady. If I could make you believe, then there'd be some hope for me. If I can't, well, I'm finished.
I want this man declared insane.
This is about a man who has had something very wrong done to him. I want you to help him.
Together, we're going to prove that there is a Santa Claus and that you're him.
I'm ready, girls.
Do you believe that you are Santa Claus?
Yes, of course.
I'd like the court to see Mr. Kringle make the reindeer fly.
He only flies on Christmas Eve.
Coles believes in Santa Claus.
Do you believe in Santa Claus?
If this court finds that Mr. Kringle is not who he says he is, then I would ask the court to judge which is worse, a lie that draws a smile,
I knew it,
or a truth that draws a tear.
20th Century Fox, Richard Attenborough, Elizabeth Perkins, Dylan McDermott, and Mrs. Doubtfire's Mara Wilson present you with the most precious gift of all. Something to believe in. Miracle on 34th Street. Directed by Les Mayfield.
All right, yeah, that was Miracle on 34th Street from 1994 with a screenplay by John Hughes, and we've talked about him three times before. Mm-hmm. First time was episode 83.
Don't Weird know, science? I only got one.
Weird Science.
Oh, duh.
Mm-hmm. Episode 103.
101 Dalmatians?
Yep. And episode 107.
That one I don't have.
Flubber.
Oh. He didn't. Did he just produce that, didn't he?
Quite possibly. I don't know. I had it in my notes.
Okay, because yeah, I only done the one.
No, because I was only looking at the writing credits. So
I must have missed that
it.
One. Yep. But yeah, I completely missed Weird Science. So. Dumb.
Yeah, I would have thought that would have been the first one in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
As the trailer said, directed by Les Mayfield, who directed Blue Streak, Encino Man, and 107 Flubber.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Richard Attenborough, who was also a great director in his own right during his mm-hmm. lifetime. And, of course, best known for his role in Jurassic Park.
Yes, I know. You're like saying, I love Richard Attenborough so much. I'm like, but he killed all those people in Jurassic Park.
He was also in the remake of Dr. Dolittle and Gandhi.
Yes.
He was mm-hmm. in Gandhi.
And Flight of the Phoenix.
And was he in Flight of the Phoenix?
Yes, he was.
I don't remember him in Flight of the Phoenix. Oh, he was.
Damn he was.
It. The original film.
Yes.
Yes, he was.
173.
I can't believe I missed that.
It's okay. I'm making up for missing Weird Science, I guess.
Yeah. Elizabeth Perkins played Dory Walker, and she's been in Big, The Flintstones, and episode 50 for us.
Ghostbusters, yes.
Episode 50, Ghostbusters.
Oh.
Yes.
I like her. She's
the one that people don't like to recognize.
I...
We've had that discussion. Go listen to the episode. Yeah. We're not going to get into that.
We're not going to get in there.
It was a divisive episode.
It certainly was.
I still stand by my standpoint. It sucks.
You're fine.
Two is shit.
Continuing on, Dylan McDermott was Brian Bedford, and Sam and I have talked about Dylan McDermott in episode 51.
Hardware.
Trish wasn't there for that one.
Yeah, I think I was away, wasn't I?
Yes,
I do believe you're on vacation. Yes.
Yes.
JT Walsh was Ed Collins, and I probably best know him for his role in A Few Good Men. James Remar was Jack Duff, and he was in The Warriors, mm-hmm. and we gave him half an episode all to himself when we had his panel from HorrorCon in episode 157.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Leaves was Alberta Leonard, and I was happy to see her despite her small role and not very much dialogue.
And a lot of hair.
Huge
amounts of hair.
To Live and Die in L.A., but best known for her role in Frasier.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Simon Jones was Donald Shellhammer. Shellhammer was definitely reduced in this movie mm-hmm. in his part, but I quite liked Shellhammer because he was very much thinking about the Macy's store, and I think he was kind of the guy on the ground running everything.
Yeah.
And was easily swayed once the customers were like, hey, you're sending, you could see he was going to fire that guy for sending people away. And then when he was getting loyal customers out, I'm like, well, wait a minute, we might be onto something, and takes that right to Macy's.
Yeah.
And he plays Shellhammer in another John Hughes film. He actually played the character of Shellhammer
Home
twice.
Alone?
And I should have written it down, but I was surprised. I'm like, he played a character named Shellhammer like 2 years later in another John Hughes film.
That was probably a
I'm betting
too.
It's Home Alone in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet you it was a nod to the original Miracle.
More than likely, yeah.
Yeah, and he's best known for being in the Thomas Crown Affair and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned Thomas Crown Affair because it has been remade a couple of times. So we'll cover that someday. I just put that in your little brains and pack it away for a while. And like, hey, you mentioned that. And when we get there, he's like, oh, yeah, he did say that. William Wyndham was C.F. Cole, kind of replaces the Macy's character, which didn't technically exist in the original film, despite being a real department store. Mm-hmm. He'd already been dead for a good 50 years. William Wyndham was in To Kill a Mockingbird and Uncle Buck, another John mm-hmm. Hughes movie.
And 50-Foot Woman.
Oh, I did miss that.
Yes, so that's episode 141.
141, awesome. Mara Wilson was a well-known child actor in the mm-hmm. 90s, played Susan and the daughter of Dory, and as the trailer mentioned, she was in Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mm-hmm.
Doubtfire. I want a Doubtfire.
Is this place really on fire?
The Tom Cruise was in that movie. No, she was in Mrs. Doubtfire and a movie called Matilda, which was another great kind of kids movie. Robert Prosky was Judge Henry Harper, who was in a couple of movies we've talked about. Episode 178.
That was Last Action Hero.
And episode 193.
The Keep.
The Keep, absolutely. And Josh Ackland, he was way down on the thing, so I had to go look him up and like, oh, wait a minute, what's that actor's name? Because I didn't get there on my notes. And, of course, he's the big bad from Lethal Weapon 2 and also the owner of the rival store, Shoppers Express, in this
movie. I want to mention one more because Allison Janney makes one of her very early appearances in here as the mother.
That was her, yes.
And she,
I was trying to place that when I was watching. I'm like, she looks so familiar.
Yeah, she's so young in this movie.
And Mary McCormack was the assistant to Elizabeth Perkins.
But and the only reason I mentioned it is because we also have talked about Allison Janney in Hairspray.
That's right.
Yes, in episode 179.
Excellent.
So good. I might have missed a couple of the John Hughes
I ones. Think we evened out on this
yes.
one. You might have even edged me out.
I did a lot of reading on this one for some reason. And that's why I'm surprised I missed the John Hughes ones.
Yeah.
But I was here.
You're pretty good with his library, so.
I am, but more his 80s library than his 90s, because I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think John Hughes is more known for those teenage romantic comedies, that sort of thing.
Well, from my generation, for sure.
Yeah.
Right? But the kids from my generation are the ones who would recognize the 90s stuff. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and I don't.
Like, I less think about him as the guy who wrote Home Alone and Uncle Buck and that sort of thing, but he's not directing either, so it does kind of push him in the background a little bit, so you don't think him as attached to these movies as much as he is.
That's right, yes. Mm-hmm. And he produces a lot of these as well, right?
Yeah.
So it's not just writer, it's writing and producing.
Yeah. Yeah, and this one he did produce as well.
Yeah, because he did become quite reclusive as he got into the 90s and before he passed, he was almost a shut-in, apparently.
Oh. guess that's just a thing with people named Hughes.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, we don't have any evidence of pee in jars, but I don't know. Sometimes that's the whole thing. Like when you get older and more reclusive, if you're ill, I think that really kind of colors that, where you don't want people to think of you in a certain way after you've done this sort of thing. Mm. Like you've been this part of people's lives. You probably sometimes, it would be like if Santa in these movies became very ill, he might become reclusive because he didn't want people to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, and as Sam mentioned, Alfred, the actor who played Alfred, had a cameo in this movie, and he was the last mm-hmm. surviving member of that cast at that time.
Yes, he would have been.
Well, mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, the mother, Maureen O'Hara, when did she pass?
I remember her
as the mother in Only the Lonely, which is an awesome mm-hmm. romantic comedy with Allison from The Breakfast Club. And then John Candy, and mm-hmm. she plays John Candy's mom, and she's amazing in that.
Yeah, that was before 1994.
Okay.
Yeah, no, she had a really long career.
She did, yeah.
Oh, and she was in like that Sean Connery one, Leprechaun one, Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Oh, yes.
Oh, good God. I don't even know. I don't think I've ever seen that one.
They play that a lot on Disney at six on Sundays.
I'm going to have to go. I think I saw it on the Disney Plus menu when I was.
It's. Watch it. It might be an episode if you want it to be.
It actually has been requested by a friend of mine because he likes these weird little Disney movies.
You know what? Take a quick look. Give it some thought.
It's actually on my list. I have it written down. Mm-hmm. It just sounded so absurd that I'm like, this might be fun to do.
It's real absurd. It's right in our wheelhouse.
Well, I mean, we've been bouncing back and forth here, but there's still lots of charm in the 94 that, I mean, Attenborough's really good as the Santa. To say he's not as good as Gwen
is not an insult.
It's not an insult. I mean, these movies, yes, it's not rated as high. IMDb gives the original 7.9 out of 10 and 6.5, respectively, for the remake, which isn't bad.
No, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's not a terrible remake. And
They did
all the things that we continually ask them to do remakes. Just take the original story, make something mm-hmm. new out of it. It's just that in this case, the changes, again, when we talked about this before, is the changes didn't quite work for mm-hmm. the film. They actually diminished it rather than making it better.
It undercut the message.
And they missed something. When that kid, who is at the beginning of the film, he meets this kid who winds up being the grandson of the judge. So this mm-hmm. is a chance meeting that winds up coming back later, and the kid becomes a witness. But in that first meeting, he's like, it's actually in the trailer where he asks if he really is Santa Claus. Yes, I really am Santa Claus. And he's like, damn, I should have got his autograph. He never did get that autograph. He should have gone for it in the courtroom.
Yeah, he should have. It would have been a really funny throwback. Just really made the throwback that much funnier.
Yeah.
But I have to say, any and all charm from the remake, I only ever got from Attenborough and Mara Wilson. Like, their charm and their watchability are what carry that entire movie. I mean, I could happily, and I love Elizabeth Perkins. I think she's great. But if you could just ditch her and Dylan McDermott, I could watch a whole movie with just the other two.
If they'd have played the same type of role that they did in the original, I think they would have worked better. I really loved when Dylan McDermott and Mara Wilson were together. They were really good together.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought there was great chemistry there, and he does come off as this person who would be a loving father.
I didn't get that at all.
I thought he was fine in those roles. It was less chemistry when he was together with Perkins.
Yeah.
I think, you know what, I would have removed him from the movie completely. I think if you tossed a Bill Pullman in there, you would have really had something.
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
It would have been fine.
More of an everyman and less of a pretty boy.
Mm. Yeah, and somebody who, like, I can get he's got this emotional core. I don't ever get that from Dylan McDermott. I just never do. Even back from Steel Magnolias, didn't get it then either.
Yeah, that's a personal thing. Yeah, I didn't think he was that bad.
Enjoyed him in this movie, and I'm not a big fan of him.
I'm similar. I'm not a big fan either, but I thought he was actually quite good in this movie.
Yeah, he did a good job of feeding off his co-stars and sort of coming up with something. I loved his interactions with Attenborough as well.
Mm. And you know what? I think also it would have been even better if, like, J.T. Walsh wasn't mustache twirling. I believe he could play affable quite well. And if they'd actually leaned into this, it would have really elevated the movie. Because I like J.T. Walsh. I'll watch him in lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they'd made him affable and sort of pulled into this against his will and he's just doing his job, it would have really elevated this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were too many bad guy type roles. And then your big heavy, the most scary guy, you never really get
see him twice.
Yeah, you see him twice. You never see him interact with Kris Kringle, as far as I'm aware. I don't believe
never
so.
Does.
There are offers made to hire him away, but that's all through Remar. And you've got this really believable bad guy like this. And you don't use him.
Yeah.
And I honestly thought there would be at one moment where Santa be like, well, I know why you're mad. You got all that coal because you were a bad little boy all those years.
Yes.
I thought that was coming.
Yeah, that would have been quite funny. The other thing that was missing from this remake that it really bugged me when they brought it up in the court trial is when Santa got paid in the original, he instinctively went, well, the home I live in needs a new x-ray machine.
Yes.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, he wasn't going to keep any of it.
He wasn't going to keep any of it. And that would have been a great bit in the courthouse where it says, well, you're doing this for money. He's like, well, yes, no. I got paid money, but that money was spent on an x-ray machine for the seniors' home that I live in.
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that would have, again, really sort of reinforced that he's Santa rather than sort of leaving it hanging like that.
I also would have liked the ideas, like going, yeah, no, the bank is cashing his checks as Kris Kringle.
The
like, his social security number is not here. It's somewhere else. Chris, like, to have that.
Kris Kringle always had the answers in the original film.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, he does in this one. But it really diminishes his character when he's stuck. And he doesn't.
Yes.
Every time that came up, it really bugged me.
And he loses his cool a little too much.
Yeah.
In the original, like, he's more playful with his answers. Like, we were talking during the trailer where at the one point the judge says, is like going, well, the guy asks him, where do you live? He's like, well, isn't that what this trial is about? To find out where that's going to be.
Yeah.
He's on the ball in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not crazy at all.
Yeah. No. And Attenborough looks distressed a lot.
I mean, part of Kris Kringle, he understands what he's there for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what is going to come off as lunacy. Like, he's very aware that the truth, if he is more playful with his answers in a roundabout way, it's going to make him look not as crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And
smart.
It's like, well, of course I live at the North Pole. Well, we've looked. There's no house. Well, it's invisible. I thought everybody knew that.
Yeah.
See, and that seems silly, but I like the idea. Is like, well, no, I'm sitting here bending space and time for one night. What makes you think I'm going to let you find it?
Yes. Yeah. And that's one of the things that made Gwyn so believable too, is the fact that you always got the impression he knew it was going to work out fine right from the get go.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as he went to the trial, he looked very calm and confident and relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, again, Attenborough, right up until from when you first see him in the asylum, he's very distressed and he's very down on himself. And Gwyn was as well. But his confidence comes back very quickly after speaking to Brian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas it doesn't until the very end of the trial in the remake.
Oh, yeah. How he gets his confidence back in the original, where he talks to Gwyn and he's like going, look, this isn't really about you. This is about the children. And then Santa's like, oh my God, yeah, you're right. I have to get over myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's more realistic to the spirit of who Santa's supposed to be.
Yeah.
The other thing that they brought up in the remake too is a lot of the sort of the biblical stuff, the Saint Nicholas and all that stuff where he's downgraded and they don't celebrate his day anymore. And
the church had downgraded Saint Nicholas. That was used as evidence against his importance.
And that's not evidence that he isn't Saint Nicholas. That also bothered me, because the other bit about it too is like, yeah, they took away his day and downgraded him, but he still remains a saint. There are hundreds of saints that don't have a day. That doesn't mean they're not saints. That's not evidence.
Yeah.
I had so much trouble with what they considered evidence in this fucking trial.
He's
so angry.
I mean, how does that go to prove that he's not Saint Nicholas? The fact that the church isn't recognizing him as important as he once was?
And when the church doesn't, they're not a federal agency.
No. So you didn't really establish anything there.
Nope.
No, and they recognize Christmas, which is Santa Claus's day.
Yes. Yep.
Right.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a big one on the calendar. I think it's the biggest one.
Yes.
So either you do or you don't. So here's the thing. It's like going, if you're saying that they've downgraded St. Nicholas, but you still recognize Christmas, nope. And the other thing about Christmas is it didn't happen on that day. It's generally believed that he wasn't born around that time.
And that's the funny thing. And I just sort of realized this now of all times is we celebrate Christmas to celebrate the birth of Christ if you're in a Christian country and you're a Christian. So we're actually celebrating two religious icons on Christmas, because we are celebrating St. Nicholas through the imagining of Santa Claus, and also, of course, the birth of Christ, assuming that you're a Christian and have that faith, right? So there's an irony there, too, when you really think about it, is it's not just about Christ, it is about another saint.
Yeah, and the whole point is, like, they just sort of decided on this day.
Yes.
There's a lot of religious scholars who do not believe it is around this time.
Well, we're not going to get into that, but yes, I mean, even the calendars didn't work a little differently. Gonna... So I think I even read something about it years ago, and it's technically it would have been like August.
Yeah, or it would have been like springtime, because most of the times that people get pregnant in fall, because it was easier to like get that extra weight through the winter and then have babies in the spring.
Yeah.
Because actually they've looked at it, and most women get pregnant over kind of colder months. We're more fertile then somehow.
Well, they're also stuck in the house and nothing to do.
There's exactly that, yes.
But they do see women's fertility go up.
It's either watch Miracle on 34th Street or get busy.
Yeah. If I was given the options, like going, okay, so we can have sex or watch the remake. Okay, let's have sex, because I'm not watching that remake.
Like, all right.
And if we watch the remake, I'm gonna be too angry for sex.
Nothing wrong with angry sex.
Oh, no. I'm going to make everybody else unhappy. I'm not going to have that. We're not doing jack shit until we discuss how bad this movie is.
So, technically, we're having that conversation right now.
We're glad we're not before you there, Trish.
There we go. Thank you. Thank you very much. But, yeah. Okay, but I just have to say one thing. Mara Wilson, what a delight.
She is. Yes. Her and Attenborough really shine in this movie and probably elevate it from that 5 out of 10 to that 6.5.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
And I love the fact where she's just sitting there. There's actually only one moment, too, where she's telling, like, can I decide whether or not I'm going to not believe? I think that's so adorable. She's like going, I don't want to not believe, but maybe figure out if I do want to believe.
Yeah. I can't think that any the other TV iterations would even come close to either one of these films.
I can't imagine that it would either.
As I said at the outset, casting St. Nicholas here, Kris Kringle, was the most important thing. And I was a little baffled when I read that Edmund Gwenn won for Best Supporting Actor at the Oscars. I'm like, he's the star.
Right?
So who was the star if he's not the star? But yes, it is an ensemble, but he's clearly the star.
We have had this argument once before on how the Academy can't figure out what the star of a movie is.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was certainly well-deserved either way.
Yes, absolutely. But
baffled me.
He is the central figure of the film.
I mean, the original film was nominated for 4 Oscars and won 3. Yeah. The other two for story, it was not nominated for Best Director, which was odd, but it was up for Best Picture, and I can't remember what it lost to. Great that it got recognized. And Miracle on 34th Street, the 94, was Fox had intended to release it on a much smaller scale and had pre-tested the film with pre-test audiences to a resounding 100%. Everybody loved the film, who clearly hadn't seen the original.
No. Or it's been so long enough between viewings that it didn't sort of resonate with the same way it does when you watch it back to
or
back.
Or what edit did they see?
And I don't know if you guys remember when this film came out and the 94. Heavy mark. Well, not the year. But
no, but I mean, like, 94 was packed with good movies.
Yes, but it got a lot of advertising. I remember a ton of advertising around this movie. Like, the advertising budget got tripled on this when the test screenings did so well. Now, there was a rather really big Christmas movie out this year. Do you remember what that was?
Trying to remember which Christmas movie it was.
I have no idea.
I know Pulp Fiction was that year, but it's not Christmas.
It was a Christmas movie. It was called The Santa Claus.
Oh. Yes, there it is.
So Tim Allen's trilogy starts in 94 with and that one just crushed everything under its heel, and the audience was just too split, and they chose Tim Allen that year.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a strong film for sure, but I mean, when you look at how wonderful that first Santa Claus movie was, I get it.
Yeah, I totally get it. And it was something new too, right? Yeah. I mean, this is
Watch the remake when the original's on television right now.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, when you think about what you could have a choice of watching, do you want to A, watch a movie where there's a whole doubt of Santa Claus and he goes on trial, or B, have evidence of Santa Claus where you go to the North Pole and see the elves and see how everything works? What are you going to choose?
Yeah, I'm going with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a hard choice.
And if you're like me in 94, I mean, I didn't watch the film and I was sick of it because it was on every year.
Yeah.
It just... I mean, I'm kind of sad I didn't now. I kind of missed out, but...
But from here on in.
Yeah.
We got it.
Definitely.
The original's there.
I've got a few on my list now that both these movies are on Disney Plus because of the Fox acquisition. Mm-hmm. So you can enjoy both of these movies over there and all the Santa Clauses over there as well. Mm-hmm. So I've got quite the Christmas list of movies this year for Christmas movies, including We're No Angels, when Sam and I had done that earlier in the year.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we basically said, yeah, this is going to be a standard Christmas watch for us as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, the original?
The original.
Oh,
one.
No question. It is such a great Christmas movie.
Yeah, don't bother with that remake. But
no.
That original is a great Christmas movie. And will make you feel warmer because they're on a tropical island.
Yes.
Well, there you go.
It'll be the only one that doesn't feel cold.
Yeah.
I will have to say, this is a tiny of a side and a bit of a narrative left turn. When you talk about Christmas and warm places, I remember spending one Christmas when I was in Australia and it was like plus 35. And you're like going, and then they're playing like these commercials where like Santa Claus and Let It Snow. And I'm like, oh, this is so very wrong.
I can see that. There were a couple things I wanted to mention before I forget. They address really well in both films. Is the single mother aspect, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Especially in 1947, right?
Yes,
because they didn't make her a widow, mm-hmm. which is what they would normally have done back then. Is they would have made her a widow, but this is just an absent father.
I loved that. And there was a little bit of controversy there as well. The movie actually, I think, got picketed by some church group because she was a single mother.
Yeah, and they don't even say that they were married. He's just an absent father, which I really, really enjoyed. And then,
yeah, she's definitely lost her faith in both movies.
Really,
just
I thought
why
that they
so
got divorced
hardened.
In the original.
I think she was a divorcee.
Actually, I think she was. But
I think she was a divorcee.
But yeah, the whole single mother with the absent father, again, that's just the whole idea that they would touch on that so heavily in a movie in 1947. And it was handled really well in the remake as well, where they talk about how Mara Susan talks about how her father was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. Right? Again, they really sort of push that home, that this whole aspect of fatherless children.
And again, John Hughes just got to make him all that much worse, right?
Yeah. Oh my God. Like, why? Just make him an alcoholic. Like, I kind of enjoyed the idea.
The divorcee, like, they didn't get together. Just, that's fine. Yeah. They didn't get along, and she's disappointed. That's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't need
you gotta
more than
that. You got to make it
that
much worse. So you even got to hate the characters not even on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't mind if part of when she understands like the bad Santa be like, oh, was he a drinker like dad? And that would be it. Like, just have it. So that's where her understanding of it comes. She's like, of course he should have been fired because I know that's bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they kind of hinted that in the remake, but they never quite hit that until she actually says it outright. Mm-hmm. And then the other two is the drinking in the original, the fact that this original Santa is soused. He's done. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, which we all have firmly established, even in 1994, that drinking when it's cold out makes you feel sort of warm for a while, but it's also very bad for you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They knew about that then. That's what bothers me. In 47, I could see people be like, oh yeah, no, just a little nip on the bottle and I'm going to be warm and everything's good, because that's how they rolled.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like the way that they handled that in the original as well. It's just the fact that the original Santa had overdone it and had mm-hmm. been drinking mm-hmm. when he's supposed to be showing children joy and so on, even though it would have given him a great rosy nose.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then again, making him worse in the remake where he has to show his crack to all his children.
Yeah.
We already know he's drunk. That's enough.
Yeah.
But I also like the fact
that they really do go for the cheap body
it's
laughs
tawdry.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Again, very much a John Hughes trope in the 90s, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think of the success he was having with like the Home Alone films and
Uncle Buck
and even 101 Dalmatians. There's a lot of all of that in those movies. This is probably the least hostile of all of those movies.
Yeah.
When you think about it. He wrote a lot of Christmas themed movies at that time.
I recently rewatched the video where they tell you how many times Marv and Harry died in Home Alone 1 and 2. How many Marvs and Harrys you need to survive both movies.
Yeah.
Very entertaining. Recommend everybody watch it. But in the original, I love the idea, like, she's in charge of the parade and that's her whole thing. And then she's like, okay, the parade's done. I'm going home getting in a warm bath because she looks cold. I love the fact she is the one in charge. She's a single mother with a good job. I can guess what these old biddies were picketing because they're like, yeah, this is not the life that we're supposed to have.
These days, if you want a hit, you got to make sure some church group or mom group.
Oh, yeah, you need protesters.
If they're not protesting, it's a guaranteed hit.
The one note...
They don't realize that you're just giving them that much more press.
The one note that we didn't really get in the remake, because it was just sort of noted, and it was always going to happen, but in the original, when the guy's like, can we just handle this quietly with no press? And the guy's like, oh, press is a great idea. That'll totally help. Get the public court of public opinion side. Thanks for the idea, pal. And then he walks away.
Yes, let's go do that.
That was really entertaining how he handled that.
I did like that.
Yes.
Too. Yeah. And yes, it definitely got around.
Be careful what you ask for, dude.
Yeah.
You got the opposite.
Let's handle this quietly.
Yeah. One thing I did like...
I don't think so.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, and in the remake that would have happened in New York now is the full streets outside the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
That show of support that you don't really see you see it, but not in the same sense in the original.
I just assumed it was Christmas Eve in Times Square.
I know.
I didn't think they were all there for him.
Yeah.
Well, but they were all around the courthouse. You could see them from the courthouse windows.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You had the ad
clearly
in the paper.
Also in Times Square.
And the bridges, people were outside of their cars. I was like, I don't think New York was shut down like that.
No.
That would have been a really expensive scene to shoot, but...
Right?
It's pre-CGI.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
pre-heavy use of CGI, anyway.
Which made me wonder about some of that snow in it. I was looking at it, that doesn't look right.
Oh, well, if it's like Home Alone, it would have been potato flakes, which would have been really disgusting when things got warmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mush.
Nothing like Christmas movie where everything's rotting.
Oh my god. They don't really use that anymore, do they?
I don't know. That was definitely a thing they did in the 90s, but yeah. I mean,
because I know they use kind of foam, and sometimes they use like kind of that puffy cotton stuff, but they just make sure that they've got it sitting the right way and is shot from afar.
I'm sure there's lots of methods, and potato flakes might still be one of them. I don't know. I'm not a special effects guy.
I know it still fills in for frozen yogurt on The Good Place.
Ew. Don't lick it. Don't lick it.
I don't know. I like mashed potatoes, but just not with gummy worms.
Not on a cone.
Yeah, with gummy worms. Yeah, no kidding.
Just lick the worm. Lick the worm. Right. That sounded better in my head.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, no.
That's what he said.
I think if you're going to watch both these movies, watch the remake and the other one. Do it in reverse. Just
and don't watch them too close together. Like I said, we watch them back to back or a day apart. And
yeah, spread them out. You got the whole season. Well, I mean, as of this, it's about a week.
Yeah.
But if you're off
work, you're doing nothing. Just watch Christmas movies.
Yeah. But they're both worth viewing. But yeah, certainly if you have to choose the original.
Go for the original and do yourself a favor. Yeah. If you've never seen it before and you were kind of like me, you're just like, oh God, it's on every year and I don't want to watch it. Everybody else it's been done to death. Nobody wants to see this damn thing. Don't do that. Like, it is genuinely, you'll be charmed by it within 5 minutes.
You'll be delighted.
And it was an absolutely delightful film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Worth all the praise and it gets mine as well.
And I have to say, they did one thing, and sorry to go back to the Ghostbusters thing, but in the original one, they
showed... Damn it, Trish, let it go!
They had a creepy pilgrim in the Macy's Day Parade in the original, and I'm like, oh yeah, that was a real thing, was creepy balloons.
Yes.
I liked it in the original where they're like, where Susan notes that the baseball player was the clown the year before.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just repainted it and changed the head.
And that's
it just shows how pragmatic she was, right?
Yeah, I love the stuff they do. Like, but yeah, the creepy balloons, I'm like, oh yeah, no, those were real.
Yeah.
And they still are. If you watch that Macy Day's Thanksgiving Parade, there's always the balloons. That's part of the Macy Day's parade. Thanksgiving Day parade is always has the big balloons and ends with Santa Claus. Yeah. So.
But all the 40s balloons were a little scarier.
Yeah.
They did have Clifford the Big Red Dog in the remake. That delighted me no end. It just comes by behind Mara Wilson. And I'm like, that's Clifford! Yay!
I'll be honest, I wasn't paying attention to the balloons.
I was. Balloons!
I like the more historic one. That was a great thing. Like, in the original, they shot during the year before, the 46 parade. Yeah. So this was the actual parade going on, and they had cameras everywhere because there were no fucking reshoots.
No.
They could not get they screwed it up. So they had cameras in all these vantage points. So as those balloons are going by the window where Susan and Fred are watching the parade. That's the actual parade going by. Uh-huh. So they had to shoot that scene. So there probably were a lot of little ADs and stuff all over the place to get these shots all at once. Yeah. And then there's Ed Gwynn was the Santa Claus in that parade.
Nice. So he actually was the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade Santa Claus for the, from 1946.
Yeah.
What an apartment to have, hey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who wants a house when you have a, an apartment like that?
Yeah.
That's a, yeah, once a year, that's a hell of a view.
Uh-huh. I would stay there forever.
Yeah, that was a nice apartment. They were clearly getting paid very well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was a lawyer and she ran a big department store. So, and she was, I think, the promotional...
She was the special projects manager.
Yeah, so she would have been running all of the promotional aspects of that.
Although I had a question, doesn't he lose his job halfway through the movie?
He quit.
Oh, he quit. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, I was wondering if I'd imagined that. Okay.
But I'm sure he could have got it back if he wanted it. Oh, true. But he wanted to start his own firm anyhow.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that's a good note to have.
Yeah. And I mean, after
the success... Yeah, because everybody thought it was a frivolous case that he was taking and it was going to hurt his career and the firm.
And in the end, saving Santa Claus is probably a good promotion for him, and I'm sure he was doing just fine.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, man, imagine that. That'd be all over CNN.
Yeah. Can you imagine if anything happened, they're like going, oh, God, I need a lawyer. And your kids are like, get the guy who defended Santa Claus. All the time. You get so much business.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was funny where Santa talks about how the Easter Bunny goes on vacation in, was it Fiji or Costa Rica or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like the fact that they reference other mythical sort of holiday characters.
Yeah. I think it's time to get off the 34th Street. What do you guys think?
Yeah. Yep.
Beep, beep.
This was our final episode for season 5, our full episode for season 5. It's been a hell of a year. Thanks for joining us. And we got a couple of things for you over the next couple of weeks. We got a little special. Our regular listeners know we drop something silly for the next couple of weeks. We'll have something special for you for Christmas, just a little short. And we're going to be bringing back Cult Movie Trailer A Go-Go.
Your New Year's treat.
Yes.
I know what I want in it.
Uh-oh. What do you want in it?
Oh, no. It's a secret. They'll find out.
Okay.
Jay doesn't even know what it
Yay!
Is.
So.
I'm the one who curates this thing.
Oh, no. I'm going to make you put it in.
But that's my thing.
I asked Santa, and Santa said he'd let it happen. So you have no choice now.
Oh, alrighty. I guess I'll find out.
Like surprise weddings in the remake. It's just going to happen.
It's just going to happen. Well, I guess that's not so bad in the long run. I will take whatever this is. Maybe. Well, we'll discuss.
My way.
And yeah, we'll see you after New Year's, after Cult Movie Trailer Go-Go. We'll get back to our regular routine. The beginning of season 6.
Yes.
We are coming back next year.
We are.
2020.
And I hope you had all the good food and all the good time off and lots of love and happy times.
And that you got lots of socks and underwear for Christmas.
You're an asshole.
Yeah.
I'm an adult and I always need new socks and underwear. So I wish that everybody gets...
I never want anybody
to... The rest of us buy it during the year.
Yes. And it's inevitably, anybody who buys me socks or underwear, buy me things I don't like. You know, they're not the type of underwear I wear.
Absolutely. This is the whole thing. Yeah, you say you are a grown adult. And what grown adults do is buy the shit for themselves all year long.
Always need socks and underwear.
All right. Well, send your socks and underwear to...
Add Invasion of the Remake.
In care of Sam Stepanenko. His address is 251.
Do you want to leave a size, Sam? So
no.
Know what to
no, really. I do hope that you all get fun stuff for Christmas. I'm just being an asshole.
You're a mean one, Mr. Sam Stepanenko.
And if you want to give us a real gift, give us the love of your likes and your stars and your comments, especially on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars.
Do you believe in
this? They're cheap. Come on, believe in the invasion. Believe in Invasion of the Remake. Mm-hmm. And leave us a 5-star rating and a short review for your friends so they can check out the show, get their
earballs
on the show. Absolutely. And follow us on our social media. We are at Invasion of the Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. If you want to email us a list of movies you'd like us to cover, or just one, or comment on something. Tell us how great we are. We're all right with that.
Yeah.
We're like Santa in Bellevue. We need to hear that you believe in us, and then we'll be happy again.
Yes. I mean, clearly we're insane. We think we live on a spaceship.
What do you mean think? Wait, what? What are you getting at?
Bleep, 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 bleep.
Yep.
Wait, Sam?
We'll let Trish believe the illusion's still Jay.
Yes, okay.
Bleep, bloop.
You're a very good science officer.
Bleep, bloop. Bleep, bloop.
Very good.
Yay.
Very, very good, Trish.
Oh, boy.
Put away the paste.
Tell your friends where to find the show. We're in a ton of different places. Go find us on our link tree, but Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and a ton of other places, including
freaking YouTube.
So check us out on the YouTubes and all those other podcast providers. We're probably on your favorite podcast provider, unless it's Spotify. We're not there.
Mm-hmm. Someday.
But, you know, we're definitely on the big ones in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play. So check us out and search us out. Tell your friends about us, and we will catch you next year.
Mm-hmm.
Merry Christmas. I've been Jason.
Merry Christmas. I'm always Sam.
Happy holidays, New Year's, fun times, drinking. I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Santa, how does one guy get to every house around the world in one night?
Ah, yes, well, now that is a vexing question, isn't it? But you see, if you could slow time down so that a second became a year, a minute became a century, and an hour became a millennium, well, you could manage it quite easily, couldn't you? Mind you, I remember before, well, 100 years ago, before the population explosion, I could manage to deliver all my goods and have enough time left over for a late supper, a nap, and a round of golf with the Easter Bunny. Winter's in New Zealand, you know.